My name is the Analytical Services Branch in the EPA Superfund program. The Analytical Services Branch is mainly responsible for overseeing the contract laboratory program. My main role in the CLP program is to oversee the data assessment portion and also the inorganic program portion. And in the room with me today, I have Charlie Appleby. He's responsible for overseeing the organic laboratories and the high-resolution non-routine methods. So he'll be helping me answer questions as we go through the presentation. So with that, I wanted to give a short overview of my presentation. The first part, I'll be going over electronic data assessment. That includes kind of going over what SED files are, some of your data validation approaches. I'll go over what electronic data assessment does and doesn't do. What it doesn't do is get rid of the need for a chemist. So even when you have electronic data assessment, you still need an experienced chemist to actually be able to go through the instrument files to complete the data validation. I'll go over the contract laboratory program's approach to electronic data validation. We've developed a software program that helps us analyze data that's coming out of our laboratories. The contract laboratory program does thousands of samples every year, so we need kind of a very consistent approach to analyzing this data. But we think that our approach can help other people kind of develop an approach to use electronic data assessment as well as manual data assessment to analyze the data that they get as well. And part of the contract laboratory program approach to data assessment is using a tool called ECSES. ECSES stands for the Electronic Data Exchange and Evaluation System. It's the software program that we use to analyze the electronic data that we get from our CLP laboratories. So I'll do an overview of ECSES, and then I'll actually go into the software and give you a live demo and tell you about some of the advantages ECSES offers over some of the older software that we've used in the CLP program. So let's get to the poll questions. Thank you for providing your input in the poll questions. And I see there's a lot of people who have also kind of sent me a better description of what their role in data assessment is in the Q&A box, so that's really helpful as well. So it looks like many of you are data validators, and a lot of you have an association with other federal, state, or private organizations. So that's really good. I think I can really tailor my presentation to focus on the data validation aspect of the electronic data assessment. And then if there's anything I miss, obviously feel free to email me afterwards if you have questions. But we'll be going through questions as we go along. And then the second poll question was if you've ever performed data validation or otherwise worked with data from the EPA contract laboratory program. And it looks like it's about 66% of you have worked with data from the CLP program and about 33% of you have not. So that's actually really great. Even if you have worked with data from the CLP laboratory program, I think the second part of the presentation will be helpful for you because it'll help you kind of understand what level of data review the data goes through before it even gets to the region. So what you see when you go in and look at EDM. And then for those who don't work with EPA contract laboratory program data, I think the second portion of the presentation will still be helpful because it's an approach. It'll let you know our approach, and so that could help you kind of develop your own approach to your data assessment. Okay. With that, we will start the presentation by going over the typical Superfund data generation interview process. And for those of you who work with Superfund data, this process is going to be pretty standard to you. First, you want to go and define your project scope. That's step one. You define what the problem is, what information you need to address your problem. You start looking at your data quality objectives that let you know that you have data of high enough quality to be able to answer the question that you need to answer. And all this is gonna help you develop your QAPP. And so everything, all your data quality objectives are outlined in your QAPP. And your data quality objectives, they help you choose a laboratory. They help you determine how you're going to go out in the field and collect your samples. The big thing that we're going to be talking about today is they help you determine your data validation approach. So in your QAPP, you're going to outline what you need to get from your laboratory, if you're going to get any electronic data from your laboratory, what level of data you're going to get for your laboratory, what your laboratory needs to have the capability to do, and that, when you find a laboratory that can meet all your requirements, then you're going to develop your approach to your data validation. And so that may include electronic assessment, depending on what tools you have to use. It may include manual only, and that's all going to be outlined in your QA APP, and it's going to relate back to your data quality objectives. So the area, if you see this gray box here, the area we're going to be focusing on today is the gray box, the data validation, the external third-party data validation of your analytical data. However, all these pieces are important. All these pieces could probably even go into their own NARPM Presents webinar, and they're all important to the final picture of how you actually make your decision on your data, but we're just going to focus on the gray box. Okay, so a basic overview of electronic data assessment. What is electronic data assessment? So it's basically you have an electronic file, and you put that through a software program that evaluates that file against predefined criteria. For example, in the contract laboratory program, we evaluate all our data coming out of the CLP program against the National Functional Guidelines, and that's how we set the electronic assessment. So the software program, it'll compare the data to whatever guidelines are predefined in the software. It may recalculate the data. It will probably apply flags. And then it should generate a report back to the user identifying any issues and noncompliance. It should identify any missing data and areas where your data, you know, didn't meet your criteria. So basically, data assessment is everything a human being would do. It's just hopefully a shorter process. And then that allows the human to focus on what the report is actually telling you about your data. The big thing to remember about data assessment, and we're going to talk about this a little later, is garbage in equals garbage out. and if any of you are ever, if any of you have experience in the computer programming world, you might be familiar with this term. But basically what it means is your data assessment is only as good as the file you're putting in there. If your file has a lot of missing information or it doesn't have the correct valid values or things aren't in the right order, you're not going to be able to do a very good data assessment. So you need to keep in mind that, you know, it's really great to develop all these, you know, wonderful software programs that analyze data and, you know, do all these different things, but if you can't get a file that will actually run through, this comment is kind of useless. You don't get anything back. We'll talk about that. So some of the advantages of electronic data assessment, as you can imagine, it saves you a lot of time because rather than having to go through all these different papers and look at where your method was out of compliance, if you had missing information, even going through the checklist, you can get a computer program to do this within a matter of minutes. So obviously, you know, when you save time, you save money. People aren't doing this for free. It increases your efficiency. And then it also helps you get your data to your end user faster. I know a lot of you, especially data validators or, you know, people working in some kind of customer service, your customers want their data and they want it yesterday. And they always want to know, like, why they don't have it yet. So the electronic data assessment gets rid of a lot of redundancy from the manual data assessment. And then that helps you kind of hone in your data evaluation process to the stuff where you need an actual experienced chemist. And then that allows you to complete the validation faster and then get it to your end user. The software allows us to be more consistent in our evaluation. When you have a software program, you can analyze 10 SDGs, and you know they're going to be analyzed in the same way. Whereas with a human, if you have different people looking at the same data package, they might pick out different things, which is fine. But if you use software, you just know your data evaluation was consistent. And then because it's so quick and you can run things through so quickly, you can evaluate your entire data set. Whereas sometimes when you just have a person doing a manual evaluation, they just look at a subset or they just look at certain things. They're not able to look at the entire data package. And then one advantage of our software is that we're actually able to take a really big SED file and we're able to generate spreadsheets from that. So just because data is useful during the data evaluation piece doesn't mean it's necessarily useful to the end user of the data. So we can take out the important information from the SED file and put it in a spreadsheet that a user can then use in Equus or upload into their regional database and perform a data usability assessment on. So disadvantages of electronic data assessment, there are some, I will admit it. So the electronic data assessment requires a very specific formatting of files. This is because it's a software program. It's not a person that can interpret something that's a little off. Like if a valid value is misspelled or capitalized incorrectly or not in the right column, the software isn't going to be able to read that. It doesn't know what that is. So that's why I think the self-inspection piece is really important when people run their files through and it comes back and tells them, you know, if they have missing information or if it doesn't recognize a valid value. That way they can go ahead and fix them before actually doing the final submission. Sometimes the software output from your actual analytical instrument isn't compatible with your formatting requirements. For example, if any of you are familiar with SED, I'm going to talk about SED in a little bit, but if any of you are already familiar, the contract laboratory program for our inorganic program, we went from a SED stage 2B to a SED stage 3 in our latest contract. The issue with that is some of your ICP-MS instruments, they don't provide, they're not able to provide, so the SED stage 3, you are able to actually recalculate your final result from data provided by your laboratory because you're able to recalculate your calibration curve. So in some of the older ICP-MS instruments, there is no way to actually recalculate the calibration curve because it's based on an algorithm, and the person that wrote the algorithm left 20 years ago. Some of the ICP-MS instruments in these labs are probably older than I am. So it's interesting. SED was developed after the software for these ICP-MS instruments was developed. So they're not compatible. You can't really get a SED 3 out of this. And so we had to do a workaround so we could actually kind of get a modified SED 3 working with these different software on the instruments. And then another issue is different organizations sometimes require different outputs for their database compatibility. Before we started SED, it seemed like every EPA region, the DOD, and then every different state had a single output that they wanted the laboratory to give them so they would be able to compare their data. That's bad because we don't want our laboratories to also have to be IT specialists. We want our laboratories to focus on analytical data quality and actually giving us a good analysis. And then another issue with some of the SED checkers or in some of the other data review programs is that they're not flexible. So you're only able to do one set of checks, one method. If you have a bug in your program, you're out of luck. It takes 6 months to fix. You can't evaluate anything beyond what's already programmed into the software. So it's not scalable for individual projects. So even if you do an electronic assessment, there's still a lot of manual assessment that you have to go back and do. All right, so I kind of gave you an introduction to SED in the last slide. For those of you who might not be familiar with SED, SED is a staged electronic data deliverable. It's a format developed, I think, in the early 2000s by EPA because EPA needed a standard format to get our environmental data from the laboratories. It's used by EPA, the Army Corps of Engineers, and I think some small projects with Department of Energy also use SED. And it's being adapted more widely. So the SED, you'll hear about SED Stage 2A, Stage 2B, SED 3. That refers to the level of data that's included in the SED file. And then you'll also hear about SED 5.0, SED 5.2. That refers to the SED specifications. So that's a document that tells you all the required information that should be in your SED file and also the valid values. And what valid values are, those are specific values entered into a specific field so that the software can recognize them, can recognize it, and it tries to improve consistency. For example, if you're doing a chemical, you want one name for your chemical in your database. You don't want 50 common names for a chemical. For your matrix, you want it to say water. You don't want aqueous, AQ, things like that. And it has some flexibility for, you know, different matrices. You know, you can do drinking water, poor water, things like that, but it also aims to be consistent so that One, your software can read your file, and two, at the end, when it goes into your database, people can actually find what they need to find. So for example, if you had soil samples and you name them dirt, and that goes into a database, no one's ever going to be able to find that sample again. It's just never going to show up when they try to do a search. So the benefits of SED, I don't know if this is still true, but currently labs produce about 100 different types of electronic deliverables to meet the requirements of all their different customers. That's federal agencies, different states, and then different private customers. And like I said before, we really don't want our labs to be IT experts. We really want them to focus on the analytical data quality and the actual analysis. And many of these labs are small businesses, so they really can't afford to hire two or three people just to do IT, trying to get 100 different types of deliverables. The goal of the SED specifications is to establish a uniform electronic format that can meet the need of the multiple agencies and programs. We try to gather a lot of data in our SED, and then we can use a software to pick out the specific pieces of information that are important to the different programs and put them in a spreadsheet. SED also provides a common set of valid values for methods, analytes, etc. We talked about why that was important in the last slide. And the big reason we're talking about SED right now and the big reason that it was developed, it provides a standard format that you can use to do an automated review with a software such as XSEES that we use for the CLP program. So now I'm going to do a short overview of what's in a SED, what's in the different SED stages. SED stages are SED 1, 2A, 2B, 3, and stage 4. So the SED stage 1 is the absolute minimum amount of data that can be included in a file. It basically only contains your results. And that's equivalent to what you might find on a CLP Form 1. For those of you who are used to looking at CLP data. And to show you this, I pulled up a CLP Form 1. That's probably not coming through very well on your screen, but basically what you see is just the analyte name, the concentration, and the flag applied by the laboratory. You might get some information on when the sample was received, when it was extracted, so you can determine if it was in holding time. You might get some information on the preservation, depending on what type of sample it is. But that's mainly just to evaluate sample integrity to determine if you can actually use the result. But there's really not any type of validation that you can do on a SED stage 1. And I don't think I have ever seen a SED stage 1. So most of what you would probably see out in the real world is a SED stage 2A. So the SED stage 2A builds on a SED stage 1, and it includes your method and your sample-specific QC information. So those are things like your laboratory control samples, your blanks, your spike samples, duplicates, surrogate recoveries. And now that you have this information in the SED stage 2A allows you to begin to assess how precise and accurate your data is. And that will help you determine if your data is actually usable to be able to make the decision that your data is based on. Do you have any questions? And so most laboratories that do SED do a SED stage 2A, which is good. And then there's the SED stage 2B. So the SED 2B builds on your SED 2A information to include your instrument QC data. Now that's your tune data for your mass spec, your relative response factors, calibration information, peak information. And interestingly enough, this is a lot of information. So you can fit the information and the data for SED stage 1 and 2A even into an Excel file. For 2B, that's too much information to go into an Excel file. You generally have to use an XML file if you want to get to SED stage 2B. And then many laboratories aren't used to reporting this level of information because people haven't requested it in the past, or it would go into more of a hard copy data package that is sent back to the customer. So I think people are getting better and better, but mostly what you'll see is the 2A. And then you have your SED Stage 3, which builds on your SED 2B, and it actually gives you additional instrument measurement data, so that allows you to recalculate your reported results. Now, the contract laboratory program, we are trying to move to a SED Stage 3. So currently for our organic program, the labs are submitting SED Stage 3, and we are analyzing them using XEs, and then we are generating a spreadsheet specific to each region from that, from the information in SED 3. For the inorganic program, we are at a SED Stage 2B due to the issues with the ICP-MS that I talked about earlier. With this new contract that's coming out this summer, we'll be moving to a SED 3. So if you are a data validator, you'll see a lot more, you'll see some different reporting with the calibration information. So be prepared for that. And then you have your SED Stage 4, which is the highest stage of SED. Your SED Stage 4, the intention is to build on your SED Stage 3 and add instrument raw data files. I have never seen a SED Stage 4. and the reason for that is because when you add your instrument raw data files, that is a lot more information than is even in your SED Stage 3. And it's so much information that the XML the XML computer language really can't handle that. So there have been prototypes developed for a SED Stage 4, but there's nothing in commercial use right now. I do know that there is a work group outside of EPA that's actually working on developing another computer language to be able to translate the instrument raw data into an electronic format that can be included in the SED file. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes, but I think the actual commercial use of a SED Stage 4 is pretty far out on the horizon, maybe when I retire. So we'll see where that goes. However, with the contract laboratory program, we still get raw data files from our laboratories. They're included in either a hard copy that's mailed to the region or a PDF that's posted online. It's just not in an electronic format. And when you have them in a PDF rather than an electronic format, you don't do an electronic data assessment. You have an actual person and that goes in and it checks these data packages for completeness before they go to the region. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. Some resources for SED. I apologize, my computer's acting up. Okay, some SED resources. The Forum on Environmental Measurements has a really great website all about SED. It's housed by EPA. It'll give you kind of a general overview of SED, kind of just like I did, only more in-depth. That's where all the SED 5.0 and 5.2 specifications are housed. And it also has a guidance document for laboratories and for LIMS system providers on how to get data out of the LIMS system and into an actual SED file, and it'll tell you some of the relationships. So a lot of what we hear when we're trying to help our regional laboratories or some of our other customers is that they're having difficulty actually getting this data out of their LIMS system and mapped into the SED correctly. So these documents kind of try to walk you through that process and help you out with some of the relationships. So do we have any questions on SED?
Not yet.
Great. Okay, so for the next part of the presentation, I'll talk about combining this electronic assessment with your data validation. You've probably all heard these terms before, data verification, data validation, data usability. Data verification, basically what you're talking about is your data completeness. Did the laboratory give me everything that I'm asking for, everything that was required by their contract? Data validation is when you're actually looking at your analyte and your sample-specific compliance of your laboratory data compared to your method or whatever contractual requirements or requirements such as the requirements in the National Functional Guidelines or requirements you outlined in your QAPP to determine if your data is usable for your project. And then you take your results from your data validation and you use that to do your data usability evaluation. So that looks at the results of your data verification, validation. It looks at the results of the assessment of your field data and all the other factors to determine if your data meets those data quality objectives that you developed at the beginning when you were developing your QAPP, and if that data is suitable for the intended decision, or if you need to go out and collect more data. And so I think there have been other NARPM presentations or other NARPM presents presentations on kind of the nuances and differences between these terms. So I'll just say these definitions are given just in the context of this presentation. I don't want to go argue validation versus usability. But when I throw out these terms, this is what I mean. I apologize. I'm having a little difficulty on my computer. Here we go. Okay. We're set. Sorry about that. So let me go over the different stages, tiers of analytical data verification and validation. These are from a document called Guidelines for Labeling External Data for Superfund Use. It's a 2009 document. I would recommend anyone who's in data validation, if they haven't gone over this document, it's about 20 pages. It's pretty good, easy, quick read. It has a lot of information. I think we use these guidelines for naming all Superfund data, so it's not just external data. And then this document goes over the different tiers of data validation. In the document, it refers to them as stages. Which I think is confusing because I just went over the stages of the electronic data deliverables. And I can see why it does that. However, I was a project officer in Region 5 for the Great Lakes National Program Office, kind of overseeing data validation. And we refer to the different data validation levels as tiers. So here I'm just going to refer to them as tiers so they're not confused with the stage of electronic data deliverable. All right. So your first tier of your data verification and validation is an assessment based only on completeness and compliance of the sample receipt conditions. So that's basically, did your sample arrive at the laboratory intact? Was it properly preserved? Was chain of custody broken? It doesn't give you any QC information at all. It's basically just like we looked at in the SED stage one, it just your results and maybe a lab lag if the sample receipt conditions were out of compliance. So not very much information at all. When I was in the region, we referred to a Tier 1 data validation as a completeness check also. I know there's some differences in that, but a Tier 1 also meant that the data validator would go through and just make sure everything, the lab provided everything, and everything was actually there, but they wouldn't do an actual validation on the data. And then Tier 2A verification validation, you can start to see how this kind of fits into the said 2A, 2B. Tier 2A verification and validation is an assessment based only on the completeness and compliance of your sample receipt conditions, which is Tier 1, and then your sample in your sample QC related results. Water. So those are going to be, your matrix spikes, your duplicates, lab control sample, all the QC sample, all the QC samples related to your results. Then you go into your Tier 2B validation. That's based on everything in your Tier 1 and your Tier 2A. And then you're also looking at the instrument-related QC results. So you're looking at the calibration curves, peak identification, tuned data, things like that. Tier 3, everything below it, and then you are doing recalculation checks based on the calibration curve. So you might recalculate the calibration curve and then recalculate some of your sample data based on what you have there. So you can see how this is really similar to what you find in your SED file. And then finally, your Tier 4, you actually go in and look at your raw data. And so you can see when you have especially for CLP data, when you're getting a SED 3 that's being assessed with the electronic data assessment checker. The tier 1 through 3 checks are kind of redundant with what the electronic assessment actually does. But you need a chemist to go in and look at the tier, four. You need a chemist to look at the actual instrument output and make sure and use professional judgment to actually go through and really qualify the data and determine data quality. So electronic assessment, currently for CLP, it's only available up to tier 3. If you are not using CLP and you are doing some type of electronic assessment, most likely it's only going to be 2A. So the one thing to remember is that your SED stage is not equal to your data validation level. You might get a SED 3, you might get a SED 2A. That's a lot based on what method you're running and what your laboratory can do. Your data validation level is going to be set by your data quality objectives. So your data validation approach is based on your data quality objectives, and that's what you develop at the beginning of the project. Your SED is based on what your laboratory can do and what kind of electronic assessment software you're using. So how do you set an approach to data validation when you're using electronic data assessment software combined with a manual, your normal manual data validation? So like I said, what you get in your SED file is based on what the lab is able to produce. So for CLP, your SED is going to be stage 2B or 3. Depending on what statement of work the laboratory is working under. If you're not going through CLP, you might be able to get a 2A. Some laboratories can do a 2A SED file. And then there are some data assessment programs that can do a CSV file or an Excel file and other types of electronic files. Most of those only have information that is equivalent to the information provided in the 2A. And so when you're going through the data quality objective, or when you're going through the data validation process and determining your data validation, you should do your data review SOPs in accordance with what your SED checker already gives you. So you know your SED checker did up to a 2A assessment, so you may want to do quality checks to ensure the SED checker did that correctly, but then you really want to focus on the Tier 3 and the Tier 4 stuff. And that's all based on your data quality objectives and your regional requirements. So here's a little disclaimer from the document, the Guidelines for Labeling External Data for Superfund Use. Just because you do a Tier 4 validation, that does not improve your data quality. It basically just enlightens you to what your data quality is. I think that's trying to get at people can't say that just because they did a Tier 4 data validation on everything, that means your data is a very high quality. That probably means you know a lot about what your data quality is, but it doesn't make your data any higher quality just because you did that Tier 4 data validation. Tier 4 isn't needed in every case. For example, if you're doing something like a risk assessment or something that is very particular, like it requires a very high level of precision and accuracy in your data, you probably need to do a Tier 4 because you need to know if that data is precise and accurate and if you're able to use it. But, for example, on something like a removal project, if you did an emergency removal and that, you know, that sample's gone, the sample's in the landfill, you don't really need to do a data validation. You know, that's gone. The decision has really already been made. So keep that in mind when setting your data validation approach. And like I said, if you haven't read this document, the Guidelines for Labeling Externally Validated Data, it goes through a lot of what I just went over. It has a more thorough overview of the review level expected for each tier, and it lists all the minimum checks recommended for each data validation tier. And then it provides data validators with their recommended terminology for communicating to their data recipients and other data users how the analytical data verification and validation was actually done. So here's a table from that document. It says it'll tell you, you know, which stage the or which tier or stage the validation was performed to, and if it was electronic or manual. So for example, when you get an organic data package out of the CLP lab, you'll see S3 VE. So that means that data package was validated electronically to a stage 3. And then once the data validator goes in and does a full validation, you'll see that change to S4 VM. So that means the data package was validated at a tier 4 and it was done manually. And so the document goes much more in depth on all these terms. Any questions at this point?
Hey, Sarah?
Yeah,
we had a question that came in.
Sure.
And the question is, what is the link, if any, between the electronic data assessment and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, ADR?
Okay. Yeah, that's a good question. ADR, so the electronic data assessment, ECSES, currently it's only being done on contract laboratory program data. ADR, I believe, that is something that is put on the web by the Army Corps of Engineers to help people that are doing work for the Army Corps of Engineers check their files before they actually submit them. Or if someone wants to use, if they choose to use that software for their own analysis, then they can go in. I think it's a free tool that's available on the web. But basically what ADR is, it's your actual software. And then electronic data assessment is kind of the whole thing. It doesn't matter what software you use. Okay. So now I'll talk about the contract laboratories approach to electronic data validation. For those of you on the phone who are not familiar with the contract laboratory program, what it is, it's a national network of commercial laboratories that provide analytical services to EPA Superfund clients. Superfund is a big program. We take a lot of samples. the contract lab program analyzes hundreds, thousands of samples every year. We serve all 10 EPA regions and brownfields. Our laboratories are all required, they all follow the same analytical requirements and the statement of work. A lot of the EPA methods kind of allow laboratories to pick and choose different things depending on, I guess, more professional judgment on the laboratory. The CLP statement of work is much more specific. The reason for that is for the samples that are sent to the CLP labs, no matter which laboratory it goes to, we want our data that comes out of that laboratory to be comparable. Like, it shouldn't matter which CLP lab the sample goes to. They are all following the exact same procedure. And because we do analyze so many samples, we use electronic and manual screening to evaluate the data that's actually coming out of our CLP labs to ensure that they're following the strict requirements in the statement of work. And we use this data to apply sanctions for late and non-compliant data from the laboratories. So our CLP laboratories are required to submit SED files. Right now, inorganics are at a 2B and organics are at a SED stage 3. We developed the electronic data exchange and evaluation system to help us do a consistent analysis of all the SED files that are coming from our laboratories. What the XE software is designed to do, it's designed to be a very quick and thorough evaluation of the analytical data from the laboratories. It does this by performing a series of tests on the electronic data to identify potential areas of noncompliance. So an example of a test would be, you know, is your calibration curve within the limits? And if it is, you're good to go. If it's not, it puts a JFLAG on there. So then XE will apply all these flags to your data, and then it'll spit out a report telling you about why it applied all these flags and any data quality or usability issues in your data. Another advantage of XE's is it marries the data from Scribe. Scribe is a tool developed by the EPA Emergency Response Team to collect field data, and that's also in an XML format. So when the field team uploads the scribe files, XUSA will actually take the data from the field and match that to the lab sample ID. So that is another thing that doesn't have to be done manually. And then it can produce a customized electronic deliverable. It can be ECWAS compatible. It can be the universal data deliverable. But instead of a SED file going back to the user, it's a spreadsheet that has exactly what the user wants in the spreadsheet. So since my presentation hasn't really contained many pictures, I thought I'd put that schematic up of the process. So the field samples are collected. They're sent to the laboratory along with the scribe file. The laboratory analyzes these samples. It's actually the laboratory's responsibility to put all this data together into the SED file. The laboratory can do a self-inspection with the XU software and identify any missing information or any non-compliance that the laboratory can fix. Then the laboratory submits the SED file to EPA. EPA analyzes the data with XUs, and then the output is a standard deliverable that can be delivered to our customers, which are the EPA regional Superfund programs. So this is the chart that I showed you at the very beginning, talking about the Superfund data generation and review process. So where XUs fits in here, we are after the laboratory, but before the validator. So we do an analysis of all the laboratory data coming in, and then we hand off what we found to the validator, and the validator can actually look at the report, and if they see anything that looks funny, they can actually go into the data package and kind of hone in on where the issues are. So it saves them time from having to do a lot of manual, you know, looking through papers. So the XUs data assessment that the CLP does consists of three parts. The first is a self-inspection. So the laboratory is actually allowed to examine their SED file for any non-compliance or any missing information before the actual submission to EPA. We don't look at the self-inspection report. The lab can do a self-inspection as many times as possible, as long as they get the SED file to us by the due date. Once the SED file is submitted, XUs will do an initial assessment. The purpose of the initial assessment is to evaluate the file to make sure it contains the minimum amount of information and that information is in the correct format. The reason we do an initial assessment is because once you get to a stage 2B or a stage 3, if you have one thing that's missing, and XUs needs that piece of information to do a lot of different checks, you don't want to come back and have 100 different errors just because you have one thing missing. The users find that really frustrating, and it doesn't really give them a lot of ways to fix it. So XUs will do an initial assessment to identify if it has the minimum amount of required information. If the SED file passes the initial assessment, XUs will go into a full assessment, and that's the full suite of electronic checks, and then it will provide a contract compliance report back to the laboratory so the laboratory can see what they missed. And for the CLP program, we do sanctions for non-compliance, so then they should know why. If they don't get paid the full amount, then they know why. So once the SED file has been submitted to EPA, we go through what we call a contract compliance screening. So this is a report that's automatically generated by XUs to identify where the laboratory correctly adhered to the statement of work. And then, like I said, we apply sanctions if the laboratory didn't correctly follow the requirements in their contractual statement of work. We also do a national functional guidelines evaluation. This compares the data to the data validation guidelines outlined in the National Functional Guidelines for Superfund Organic and Inorganic Data Review. If you're a data validator, you've probably seen and worked with these guidelines. So this is all done electronically. Laboratories are not penalized for NFG defects, just because NFG defects have more to do with data validation and data usability, and things that are an NFG defect might not necessarily be the laboratory's fault. For example, if their matrix spike sample was out of compliance, that sample is supposed to give you information on the effect of your matrix on sample recovery. It doesn't mean your laboratory did anything wrong if your matrix, if you have a difficult matrix. However, the data validators can use these NFG reports to kind of hone in on where the specific issues with the data are. Data package. So all our laboratories are required to submit our hard copy of all the CLP forms, the case narratives, the chain of custody information, and all those raw instrument files to the EPA region. And that actually gets mailed in a big box. And then they also submit a PDF copy via the SMO portal to the, and that's accessible by the EPA region and our sample management office. So our sample management office performs a screen of the PDF to ensure that it contains all the forms and all the required raw data. We do not compare values in the PDF versus values in the EDD. They're usually the same, but there are some cases where they're not. However, that's the SMO screen, the manual screen of the PDF is just a screen to make sure it's complete. It's actually up to the validators to see if it's compliant with the requirements during the validation. So the hard copy received by the EPA region is considered the official copy of the data. That's why it's very important for the regions to ensure that the data package contains all the necessary information, even if they're not going to do a full Tier 4 data validation on it. There have been cases in the past where data was called into question, you know, months, even years later, and so they had to go back through these data packages just to take a look at the data again and verify the original result. That's why it's very important once you receive the data, you want to make sure it's all there. And if you don't, if you have any missing information, you want to get that information from your laboratory. The EPA regions can also access a PDF of the data package. The spreadsheet, the universal data deliverable that contains all the results and all the information, any regional specific spreadsheets, such as Equus-compatible spreadsheets, or I think some regions use a tab-delimited format to go on their databases. And then they can also see the XE's contract compliance screen and the National Functional Guidelines Report, and that's all available on Electronic Data Manager, and we call it EDM for short, on the SMO portal. This is a screenshot of the SMO portal. The SMO portal is a username and password protected web portal that regions can go into and access their data and do the data validation. The reason we want it to be username and password protected is when people are going in there and doing a validation, they're actually changing data and changing flags. So we want to know who did that and who did that when. And we also need some control over who is accessing what data. So if you're a regional user, you're only able to see data in your specific region. If you're a data validator, you're only able to see data that the region assigned to you. So that gives us some control and allows us to maintain our data integrity. So this slide goes a little more into EDM. EDM is a place where we store all our data assessment and NFG evaluation reports. And it's the one place where the regions can go in and access them. The advantage of it being on the web is that it's all in one location. Some data validation organizations, they do work in several different regions, and they're located in a lot of different places across the country. They're not just in the EPA regional office. So this gives them a way to actually access the data and be able to do the data validation from anywhere. And then for the field team, when the field team needs to go in and access their data, a lot of them are able to go into the portal and pull off the validated spreadsheets as well. The spreadsheets are dynamic deliverables, which means that when the data validator goes in there and changes a flag or changes the results, the spreadsheet actually regenerates. Data validators can do edits on specific analytes or specific samples, or they can do global edits, which means they don't have to go through and, you know, change a bunch of like 20 different flags just for one issue. They can do a global edit. It also provides an audit tracking log of all the changes made by the user by date and time. So that allows us to maintain data integrity and ensure that the people working on the data are the people who actually have rights to work on the data. And if you ever have a question on who changed what, you can go back and look at that audit report. Okay, and one of the last things I'm going to talk about is the universal data deliverable. So we do not provide this. I talked a lot about the SED file, and the SED file contains a lot of information. We do not provide the SED file back to the EPA region because most of the EPA regions don't find it useful. I'll show you a SED file in a little bit, but it's basically a really big file full of computer language. We provide the data in what we call the universal data deliverable. The goal of the universal data deliverable is to kind of improve the consistency of reporting and reduce any product-specific or region-specific formats. Some of our regions, they used to have regional-specific formats, but after a while of receiving the universal data deliverable, they decided they liked that better, so they switched, which is great. A lot of regions also get ECWAS-compatible and tab-delimited formats because we're just serving our customers. We can provide a lot of different formats. All right, so once the data package and electronic data deliverables have arrived at the region, the SED and the PDF have underwent the following data valuation levels. So your SED for your organics gets a tier 3, and it's based on the National Functional Guidelines. If there are any region-specific kind of tweaks to National Functional Guidelines, we can program that in to ECSES as well. And so we can do a regional-specific electronic assessment. For organics, it's tier 2B. However, that is going to be for SOM and ISM for the new contracts that are coming out this summer, both of them are going to be Tier 3. And then all the data packages for all statements of work get a Tier 1 completeness review, just as the PDF file, and that's from SMO. So the regional role in this data verification and validation process, the regional approach to data validation obviously varies by region, and it's also based on your project-specific data quality objectives, which you developed working with the QA staff in the region. Your data validation approach should be outlined in your QAPP. At the very minimum, it should include a verification of the hard copy to make sure you actually have everything there and it's all present. I also recommend ensuring that the values reported on your CLP Form 1s match the values reported in the EDD, just because the hard copy that you receive in the region is the official copy. However, the values reported in the EDD are usually the ones that go into regional databases, so you want to make sure those match. You want to make sure the official numbers match what you put in your database. And then a lot of regions use these reports generated by ECSES and the NFG reports to develop a tiered approach to data validation. So what that is, so what a tiered approach to data validation is, they look at the reports generated by the electronic assessment tool, and they use these reports to determine what tier of data validation each data package actually gets. So if things look really bad in the electronic assessment, then that data package gets a tier 4, and they determine that they need human eyes to go over that and use professional judgment to qualify the data. If things look good in the electronic assessment, then that might be a lower priority data package. So everything receives a Tier 1 completeness check. The worst data packages get the Tier 3 or Tier 4, and then there are random quality checks done on the other data packages to make sure there aren't any consistent errors or something that the electronic checker might have missed. This approach is kind of outlined in the QAPP. It's developed by the QA staff, and then it's outlined in the SOPs used by the data validator. So the advantages of a tiered approach are really similar to the advantages of actually using the electronic assessment tools for data validation. It reduces the time it takes for data validation. It speeds delivery to the end user. And it also allows the data validators to focus their attention on the data packages that might need the most assessment rather than using a one-size-fits-all approach. And obviously, this approach is very project-specific, so it can be modified based on project-specific needs and on your different data quality objectives. One thing ASB, a lot of people approach us, and they want to know exactly what XSEES checks and what SMO checks in the PDF of the data package. And we can actually work with the EPA regions to help them develop a tiered approach so that their data validators aren't checking things that have already been checked by XSEES or SMO. If you are in a regional data validator and you get a data package and it's missing information, or one of the reports that says that some information is missing and you need that information to complete your data validation, you're responsible for working with your CLP court to obtain that data from the laboratory. Even if we've already applied sanctions for missing information, the laboratory is still required to provide that information if we need it to do a data validation. Any issues of repeated noncompliance or potential fraud should be reported to your EPA CLP core and the EPA Analytical Services Branch. If you've been working in data validation for a while, you'll know what are just small issues that come up a lot and what's gross noncompliance or what's potential fraud that will probably need to be reported. And then if you have any small issues with the SMO portal, there's a email for the SMO help desk, and this is things like password resets or if you don't have access to a data package that you think you have access to, or if you're having issues with your browser, things like that.
Hey, Sarah, we have a couple questions.
Sure.
That might be the right time to stop for a second here. The first one is, what can a lab do with an older ICP instrument which cannot produce a SID stage 3, and are there any workarounds? This goes back to a comment you made quite a bit earlier in the presentation when you were discussing the SED 3.
Yeah, so I said earlier, some of the older ICP-MS instruments, the software, you can't get the calibration curve from the software, so you're not able to kind of recalculate your calibration curve and then recalculate your results when you're doing the SED 3. We tried a lot of workarounds for that when we moved to the new statements of work in the CLP program, but unfortunately, there really aren't a lot of workarounds. So when we're doing the electronic data assessment, we try to get a value as close as possible. And if it's within a range, we kind of say that it's okay. So it's really not a true SED 3. It's more of a modified 2B.
Okay. And the second question is, are CLP laboratories evaluated based on how well they do in generating a SED deliverable?
Yes, they absolutely are. We apply sanctions if the SED deliverable, well, to generate a compliant SED deliverable to be able to go through at the actual XSEES software, if they're not able to do that, we take off 15% because it is a required deliverable in the contract. And then if there are issues with their SED file, it could be between 5 and 10% based on what the issues are.
All right, thanks.
Okay, so that about wraps it up for the data validation. I'm going to touch on the part that comes after the data validation, which is the data quality and usability, and also the assessment of your field data. This is not done by the third-party data validator. This is actually done by the project team that is going to be using the data. So a little bit on field data. Like I said, Scribe is the preferred data collection program for EPA Superfund. It syncs up really well with the lab SED file generated through XSEES. So for the CLP program, CLP samplers, they're required to submit their Scribe field data file within 72 hours of sample shipment. And that gives us time to, when we receive the SED file from the laboratory, that gives us time to help them sync up so we can combine the field information with the lab information, and that doesn't have to be done manually. The CLP laboratories do not see the field information. They do not know what products or what sites these samples are coming from. That's done to kind of avoid any conflict of interest of other samples that might be at the laboratory. So XEES is the one that combines the field data and the lab information in the final, at the end. Currently, we do not do checks on the field data. There are certain checks XEES could do if it was requested by a region. For example, some projects ask that the field they have a requirement that the field duplicate be within 35%. So XEES could do a preliminary check to see if the field duplicate is within 35% of the original sample. So again, back to your QAPP, the QAPP should outline the tier of analytical data assessment that you need to meet the project data quality objectives. However, you shouldn't consider your data usable just because it's undergone the data validation. You want to evaluate your field data as well. You want to see if your data corresponds to historical information at the site, any evidence of field contamination, your field blanks, looking at how homogeneous your sample is with the field duplicates, and even looking at when you map your data out, if your GPS coordinates match and make sense. For example, I worked on a project, and they were taking sediment samples in a river, and they did the data validation, they got the data back. However, when they mapped out the coordinates, all the samples were on the golf course. So there's something going on there. You want to look at your field data as well. So evaluating data usability is a responsibility of the project team and the regional QA staff. You could do a whole other NARPRM Presents webinar on data usability or even a college course. I'm just going to touch on it on one slide here. That's basically evaluating if your final data meets the data quality objectives that you outlined in your QAPP, if your data validation and verification findings show that your data is actually sufficient for your intended decision, how it compares to historical information, what you're going to do with your non-detects. There are a lot of different approaches to using your non-detects data to see if an analyte is actually present at your site, depending on what the method detection limit in the CRQL is. And finally, the big question is, do I need any more information to be able to make my decision? If not, you have to go back and start at step one. All right, so now we're going to talk about enhanced XEES. But before I do I have any questions?
There is one.
Yeah, we do. So the question is, where is the 35% field duplicate limit? What's that based on?
Yeah, it's not an EPA-required limit, but it is a limit that some projects use to determine how homogeneous their field data is. So they say, you know, you have a field sample, and then you have a field duplicate that was taken at that exact same spot, and you look to see if the results are within 35% of each other. And if they're not, that may tell you that your samples aren't homogeneous, so that may go into your data usability. but it's not an official EPA requirement. It's product specific.
Thanks.
All right, so enhanced XEES. So CLP program is going to begin using new statements of work for the inorganic and organics in the summer of 2015. We'll also be moving to a new statement of work for the high resolution methods in 2016. The set files that the laboratories submit under these new statements of work will be assessed using what we call enhanced XEES. And we're also beginning to pilot programs to add more methods in XEES and actually expand the use of XEES outside the CLP program. So what makes enhanced XEES different is that The older software, the National Functional Guidelines checks and all these different data assessment checks were actually programmed into the software. So they were set and they couldn't be changed. With the new enhanced XEs, users are able to create brand new tests. They can modify existing tests. And then you can actually create entirely new methods without having to do any type of computer programming. So for example, I think the LCS, in our method, the acceptance criteria is like 80% to 120%. And there's kind of a movement now to base the LCS acceptance criteria on actual laboratory performance. So if you had samples or if you had a project where you wanted to base the LCS on a 95% confidence interval for past LCS studies, you could actually just go in and change the numbers. You don't have to do any reprogramming. You don't need any Java knowledge or computer programming knowledge. The methods in Enhanced XEs are reusable. They're customizable. You can share them. Like if I created a great method for herbicides, I could put that on there and anyone could use it. So what that does is that puts chemists in control of the electronic data validation. You do not need any computer programming knowledge to use the new XE software. You do need some training on the interface, but you don't need to know Java. And all these changes to XEs makes the XEs program scalable and flexible. So we use XEs for our big CLP program that does thousands of samples every year. However, it can be used by a smaller project that, you know, just wanted to run through maybe 20, 30 samples. So it can be modified to meet the needs of any analytical program. This is a schematic of kind of what we're trying to do. For EPA Superfund projects, the field samplers will go out in the field. They'll collect a lot of different samples. These samples can go to a lot of different laboratories. They might go to a CLP laboratory, a Fed laboratory, a state laboratory. These laboratories are going to give you a lot of different outputs. They may be able to do a Fed Stage 3, just like a CLP laboratory, would. If you had a laboratory, you know, doing a smaller type of method, maybe a TOC, something like that, they might not give you that high level of deliverable. But the idea is all these deliverables from all these different laboratories can be analyzed in the same way, and then your output can be a standard deliverable that can be used by your customer. And then this is the SARA schematic that I put together. So basically the idea is that you want your laboratory to be able to provide one SED file that's, you know, formatted one way. You want to do an electronic assessment, and then you want a standard output that's customized to your user. So that can be an Excel spreadsheet that's in the universal deliverable. That can be something that's Equus compatible or some other type of electronic format. So then the laboratory, the users get what they want, and the laboratory doesn't have to be an expert in 100 different types of data assessment. And then you're also getting a standard assessment, electronic assessment from XEs. Okay, and this is the part where I was going to go in and actually show you the XE software.
Do you want to pause for a few questions here, Sarah, first?
Sure.
Okay, the first question is, I believe, a follow-up to the last question about field duplicates. And it's will the field duplicate limits depend on chemical types? For example, VOCs versus metals?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because metals, you would expect them to be, there's less QC in the laboratory that can actually affect metals recovery. Metals recovery is usually pretty good, whereas for VOCs, your recovery can be all over. So all the field duplicate criteria is going to be product specific and also analyte specific.
Okay, and we have a second question here. Is XS capable of reviewing non-COP analysis? For example, SW846.
Yes, XEs is capable of reviewing any type of analysis. It just depends on the format. It can do a limited review of Excel files, but since it is a software program, it needs to know what it's reading. So we've been doing some pilot programs or some pilot projects with some of the regional laboratories working on their methods. And the big sticking point is that they're trying to do a SED file, and so they're still working on trying to get a SED file that can pass the initial assessment. But it's not limited by method.
Okay, I've got one more. Is there a definite plan in the COP to transition to the electronic copy of the data package being the, quote, official copy?
Probably not. No, probably not. It varies by region, and I think people are still very reluctant to get rid of the paper.
We have a question about the pilot program to expand the use of XSEED.
Okay.
So what's the time frame for pilot programs to expand the use of XSEED outside the CLP, and would it be easier to create new tests or modify existing tests? And further, what is the level of difficulty for modifying XSEED?
Sure. So there's not really a definite time frame for expanding the use of XSEED outside the CLP program. Right now, we're working on pilot projects, and we're also trying to get the regional laboratories on board and comfortable using XSEED, and then also try to help other people non-CLP data for Superfund to be able to go through XSEED. As for rolling it out past there, there's not really a definite plan right now, but that could change. And then, what was the second part of that question?
Well, there were three parts. And the second part was, would it be easier to create new tests or modify existing tests? Which, did you just answer that?
Oh, so the user interface, in my opinion, it's actually easier to just modify an existing test. For example, with the LCS example, the test already exists. You just have to copy it and then change two numbers. So that would take like 5 minutes. So I'll go in and I'll show you the interface, and you can kind of see what I'm talking about.
Okay, and then the third part was, you know, what's the level of difficulty for modifying it?
I would say once you're used to actually using the software, the level of difficulty would be pretty low. It would take you, you know, just a matter of minutes. You have a brand new test.
Where did our screen go?
Okay. Okay, so now I am logged into the SMO portal, the online house for all of our CLP functions. and I'm going to go in and show you how this XSEED works. Okay, so let me start by showing you how a laboratory would submit data to the CLP program. Like I said, the laboratory is responsible for creating and submitting a SED file based on the requirements outlined in Exhibit H. and for organics, that's going to be a Level 3 SED. And for inorganics, right now it's 2B. So laboratories wouldn't see all of this, all these buttons. They would only see the Submit Data button. They would click on that. Submit data, select file from your computer. Right now I'm only doing a self-inspection to make sure I have everything that's required in my file. Right now the file is uploading. I will choose, it's going to be CASC-ISM stage 3. I will acknowledge. Okay, and so that's the, you know, two-step process for submitting your SED file for a self-inspection. And then you can actually go see it. you can see all these people that are testing their different SED files for our new CAS statements of work. Like I said, we don't really pay attention to the self-inspection. We only care about what the final submission, what the final submission, the data in the final submission. So this one is still running. I'll go ahead and pull up a file that I tested earlier. So this is your contract compliance screening report that the lab would see once they did a self-inspection using XEs. So it'll tell you this one failed the initial assessment because there was required information that was missing. So then the laboratory would have to go back and fix their test file to put in any required information. We'll pull up another one. Okay, so this one actually passed the initial assessment. XEs found all the minimum information that it needed to go in and do the full assessment. XEs found a couple things wrong with this file in the full assessment. The lab didn't apply a UFLAG when it should have. One of the adjusted MDLs is incorrect. But this is just an example of the kind of thing a laboratory would see when they were going through before submitting the full data file to EPA. So once the laboratory thinks that it has its said file in the correct order, it's done the self-inspection enough times and fixed all the issues it could, it would just go back through that same process. And instead of clicking self-inspection, I would click official submission. And then that would take it through the full XEs assessment process. And then when the region goes in and receives this file, they receive the data file through the review data assessment. And since I'm a program manager, I can see all the data. However, most people logging in here would only be able to see data specific to their region. And then most data validators would only be able to see data that's actually been assigned to them by an EPA person. So let's just click on one of these projects to show you what they would see. So this PDF right here, that's the actual, that contains all the CLP forms that you're used to seeing and all the instrument data, but it's in PDF form. And then the region, it gets the actual hard copy. And then down here are what we call your static deliverables. That's your contract compliance screening report and then all your NFG reports. So you get a report on your detection limits. Here is your data review results, which actually tells you, I have an example here. So that tells you everything that XEs found was an issue in your data file. So for example, here's a data review report for a pesticide. Well, it's like an herbicide file. Tamine calibration had an issue. The DMT surrogate had an issue. XEs recommends that the data validator go in and actually look at this data to determine the validity. So there you get an actual readout of any issues that XEs found that were out of compliance that need an actual chemist to go in and take a further look. And then down here, if you wanted to pull up your, for example, your matrix spikes or your LCS recoveries, even if they were, this is for a metal file, even if they were in range, XEs would be able to pull those up for you without you having to go in the data package. So that gives you a really good way to kind of hone in on which data packages had the most issues and where you really need to focus your data validation. Okay, and since I have admin rights in XEs, so the laboratories and the data validators right now, they're not allowed to go in and actually change different tests or create different tests for XEs. But I'm going to show you, if you did want to, you know, to kind of change your test or create a new test, here's where you would go in the XEs, into the XEs admin user and actually kind of do that. So here is a listing of all the tests in XEs. Right now, we only have about 400, which is really good because in the previous version of XEs, we had about 4,000 because the tests were tied to specific methods. However, these tests are just tests. They can actually be applied to any method. For example, right here you have XEs 145. Your CCV must be performed every 2 hours for ICP methods. So that's going to be in our ICP-MS and our ICP-AES method. And I'm not actually going to go in and change anything. but if I wanted to say, you know, I want to make a copy. If I said, okay, I only want the CCV every 3 hours, I could copy that test. And then when you go into this, your managed test, you can change the description that appears on your report. You can change the stage. You can go in here and you can change the defect message. And then right now that says that's a method compliance and a data validation test. And then here you just change that to a 3. And so when you're actually, so XEs has, all the CLP methods in it already. If you wanted to go in, you could either copy the method and then add different tests to it that you liked, and then you can get rid of tests that you didn't like. Or you could create an entirely new method using these tests that are already in there, I just showed you. Or you could create new tests. And then that kind of goes into creating your process flow library where you actually go through and use these head files. And that's a very basic overview of how you would use enhanced XEs. I think the main idea there is that rather than having to go through and actually create a new computer program, you use a user interface to create different tests and modify your tests. And you're not stuck to what's written in the computer. You have, like, the chemist is actually able to go in and do that. So these are just a few screenshots. Those are a few screenshots that I wanted to put up there just in case my internet wasn't working for some reason. Okay, there we go. So you're able to go in and you're able to change your valid values. If you want to add valid values, you're able to kind of pick and choose the different types of tests you want to put in your method. And then you're able to modify, like, do small modifications on these different tests. So it offers a lot of flexibility to, you know, not only do CLP methods, but also do new methods. Sorry, we're having a little technical difficulty on my computer with the interface. Okay.
It was something totally different. It was totally different before.
Okay.
Are we screen sharing or are you going back to the slides?
I can go back to the slides now.
Okay.
Got that.
Either way, whichever you'd like to do.
Yeah, I can do the slides.
Okay.
All right, so right now, where this is at is we are working with the regional laboratories to kind of provide training on how to use XEs. Okay, so right now we're trying to get some of our regional laboratories on board on how to use XEs and also try to see if we can, we're working with the Army Corps of Engineers and we're working with the Great Lakes National Program Office to see if we can help their contractors, you know, be able to get in and use some of the different tools available through XEs so you can have more of a customized data evaluation or electronic data assessment. So I apologize for any technical difficulties. It's kind of hard to move between software and PowerPoints and hope all your software works correctly. But does anyone have any questions at this point?
And if there's anybody on the phone, you can hit #6 to unmute your phone if you want to ask a question that way. You may also continue to submit your questions through the Q&A box in the lower right corner of the Adobe Connect screen.
I see a question. It says, is there a standard EDD deliverable for Superfund sites that can be loaded to ECWAS instead of different formats for each EPA region? Yes, we do provide region-specific formats at the request of the region. However, we do have a format for ECWAS available. And we can do, because we already have this format available, we can do this format for any projects. So if you have a Superfund project in a certain region that needs an ECWAS deliverable, but that region doesn't normally use ECWAS deliverables, you can request an ECWAS deliverable just for that specific project.
If there are any questions, you can hit #6 to unmute your phone and ask the question that way.
Got some coming in.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
I'm wondering if is ECWAS a tool? I mean, ECWAS a tool that can be utilized by independent validators, or do you have to be using it for CLP work or programs?
Yeah, at this point, it's not available outside of EPA. We're working on kind of trying to make a publicly available tool. However, I think our priority right now is to get it in the hands of the regional laboratories and also EPA Superfund. So I think a publicly available tool is on the horizon. It's just kind of a ways off.
Are there any other questions while people continue to type on from the phone lines?
Is it one more question from me, Cindy? Is it reasonable to expect that most full service laboratories should be able to provide the a said 2B for most of their analyses, if not metals by older ICP instruments? I mean, is that a reasonable expectation? Because in my experience, most can easily provide a said 2A, but the 2B, they tend to balk at that and say it's just, some say it's just out of the question. Is it reasonable? Is that a reasonable response?
I think the said 2B is difficult to provide the first time you're providing it, but most LIMS systems and most, you know, larger laboratories, now they do have the IT expertise and they do have the experience working with SED where they should be able to at least start trying to be able to construct a SED 2B file rather than just saying that it's not possible and we're not going to do it. Once you do your SED 2B file the first time, you have your SED 2B file. It's You can do it as many more times as you want. It's just the first time trying to get everything in the right place.
And are there tools out there to actually perform the assessment of the 2B information? Because in my experience, the one that the Corps uses, it'll read it, but it won't do anything with it. It'll still just, a lab could submit a 2B deliverable, but it's only going to look at the 2A information. Are there other tools available for the?
So I don't know of any other tools. I don't know of any tools besides XE's that do an evaluation on the 2B. I think currently there aren't that many laboratories that actually can produce a 2B. So I guess it's kind of a, there's no software to evaluate a 2B, and therefore no laboratories produce it. But I think that's another reason we're looking to make the XE's software kind of available beyond EPA and beyond Superfund. So you'll have a software program that can check a 2B, do a check on a 2B.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions on the phone line? I'm not seeing any new questions here, Sarah. Did you have anything else to finish with?
Okay. And my computer's stuck, so I can't really move between the slides very well. However, I apologize for some of the technical difficulties, but if you do have questions, my email is on the final slide. It's gohl.sara@epa.gov. I'd be happy to field any questions that you have after the presentation. If you're an EPA project officer or you're in an EPA laboratory and you're interested in learning more about XE's or setting up a better demo than what I can do, I can actually, please email me and I can provide you more information and set up a demo. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and I'm happy to take any questions by email after this.
Thank you, Sarah. I'm going to go through the last little bit here to wrap up the webinar. So I mentioned at the beginning that there were other, the homepage had additional resources, and as well it has the feedback form. So we really appreciate any feedback that you have on today's webinar, as well as the platform and technology used to deliver the platform, or to deliver the webinar. And if you fill out that feedback form, you'll be directed to a page that allows you to print something off that says, hey, you attended today's webinar. And remember that we have several new ways to stay connected. We have Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn accounts for Clue-In. You can also, again, the contact information is available on the very first slide of today's presentation for today's presenter. And with that, that ends today's session. Remember to check back with us on Clue-In in a couple weeks if you want to review the archive, the audio of this presentation. We'll have a full recording as well as the slides to the Connect, or direct link to the Connect archive